Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I'm your host for The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share advice for techies, for earth lovers, and for penny pinchers. As much as I love the sound of my own voice, this broadcast is going to rely heavily on guests who are subject matter experts on everything, ranging from how to get your small business up and running, interviews with some of the brains behind your favorite apps, and even how to remove garbage from outer space. You never know who's going to pop up and join me next in studio, so make sure to subscribe to The Town Hall on iTunes to get our episodes downloaded directly. And if your boss is making you work through lunch or your commute is just too short and you miss something awesome, don't worry, we've got your back. You can check out our blog for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. I am so honored and, more importantly, excited to have Justin Winters. She's the executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, and she's joining me via Skype this afternoon. Justin, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, you've been at the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation for quite a while now. What has that been like? How did you get started over there?
Well, I was very lucky to come join the foundation around the 11th Hour documentary, his first documentary on environmental issues that he produced back in 2007. And, you know, that was a starting off point to a 12-year relationship. But the film itself was just an incredible immersion into environmental issues. And there were 72 different experts in that film. And listening and having a chance to interact with all those folks made it abundantly clear just how many great environmental threats we were facing and how many huge opportunities there were to really move the needle in a positive direction. So since that time, over the past 12 years, Leo and I have worked closely together to really build up our environmental work, both protecting species, protecting threatened habitat, both in the oceans and the forests and various grasslands around the world, and working on issues of climate change as well.
And what sparked like your personal passion for sustainability and activism? Were you doing anything in that realm before the 11th hour?
I was actually. I grew up, you know, pretty much obsessed with horses and animals and wanted to spend all my time outdoors. And then in high school, I ended up becoming an environmental activist and ran our activist group that, you know, implemented our first recycling plan on campus. So it's been an issue that I've been personally passionate about for my entire life.
If you can speak for him, what was the reasoning behind Leo initially setting up the foundation and turning like environmental awareness into his, you know, true life's work?
Well, I think like me, it was something that from very early days, he had a deep connection to nature and to animals and was really intrigued with the great beauty of the world and all the different, you know, spectacular beauty and different species that live in our oceans and live in our forests. So that's always been a strong thing for him. But when he had a very pivotal conversation with Al Gore on climate change many years ago, that really made it very clear to him how epic and existential the threat of climate change and environmental issues are. And that really set him on a course to wanting to take action in a meaningful and very personal way. And he did that with the foundation. And over time, you know, the foundation has become a platform for really getting essential resources out the door to the best organizations and individuals around the world working on these issues, and also giving them a platform through Leo's various social media channels and our website to really showcase the incredible work that they're doing.
I'm pretty sure, obviously, everybody knows who, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, the actor, is. But there are people out there who don't really know about his philanthropic side. So let's back it up a little bit before we start talking more about the initiatives. What exactly is the heart and soul of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation? What is the mission of the organization as a whole?
The mission of the organization is to find the best organizations and individuals in the field that are taking action to protect threatened habitats and species, and getting them both resources and also building deep partnerships with them so that they feel supported and feel like their voices and their actions are being heard, and getting them to work effectively together so that we can really move the needle.
I really want to take, you know, most of the time that we have together to talk about a bunch of the different impactful, you know, obviously innovative initiatives that you guys are doing, but I would be remiss if I didn't take the opportunity to talk a little bit more about the 11th hour. I remember I was a freshman in college when it came out, and I sat in my dorm room with all of my girlfriends and we all watched it together.
And obviously, I'm not going to lie to you, we watched it because it was work of Leonardo DiCaprio, and to an 18-year-old girl, there's nothing better than that. But I certainly remember that this was my initial introduction about the dangers of climate change. And obviously, it stuck with me for over a decade, even into my career. Can you, you know, as a fangirl and as the host, I'm just so curious, can you tell me a little bit about making that documentary and how that really just like skyrocketed global environmental awareness? I mean, that's a huge, huge film.
Well, first of all, it's just great to hear that it had such a profound and lasting impact on you from college days. That means a lot to me, and I know it would mean a lot to Leo.
Go ahead and tell them. I'm kidding.
I'm happy to share that because every person that, you know, whose awareness and inspiration on environmental issues is raised, is it makes a difference. So it's just exciting to hear that. And, you know, when you're working on a documentary, a lot of documentaries, even documentaries with Leo's name and voice added to it and thought leadership attached to it, it's still hard to make sure that, you know, you're reaching a broad array of people around the world. So
absolutely.
The fact that, you know, you and your friends gathered around together in college to watch that and were so impacted just means a lot. But I guess to your earlier question, you know, being involved in it was, for me, really profoundly impactful. I just had never until that moment fully understood the breadth of environmental issues that we were facing. And hearing so many people from so many different perspectives, from so many different parts of the world, speak to how all these urgent environmental threats are so deeply connected to each other and how deeply connected they are to the well-being of humanity was really moving. And though I have to say also very, you know, overwhelming when you're faced with all that, the last 20 minutes of that film, as you know, is very solutions focused. Mm-hmm. And to me, that really set us on a course for what we would do with LDF going forward. And that was really showcasing the best solutions around the world to avert these various crises and how LDF could help, you know, both tell the stories of those incredible efforts around the world and get people to see that there really is a reason to believe that we can move the needle and that there's hope. And that we could also get them very necessary and urgently needed resources to keep doing that work.
I find it so interesting that, you know, there were so many different people interviewed, and the logistics to coordinate something like that must have been a task in and of itself. And I just find it, you know, very cool that we're able to talk about these issues now on a global platform. And obviously, LDF does a lot more than just the 11th hour. And you guys have taken on a lot of projects really around marine conservation and preservation. And this is perfect, you know, for us to talk about because Oceans Day is coming up in a couple weeks on June 8th. What does Oceans Day, you know, World Oceans Day mean to the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation? And how can people do their part on June 8th?
So for LDF, you know, every day is World Oceans Day because we work on these issues, you know, 365 days a year. But I do think that those kind of days are just important public markers for people to really focus in on the beauty of the oceans, how worthy they are of being protected, and the wide array of things that you can do to take action to protect the oceans and all the incredible life within our oceans. So at LDF, we don't have a specific campaign generated for World Oceans Day, but you know, when you come to our website, leonardodicaprio.org, and when you follow us on social media, we are continually posting stories about some of the best, you know, projects in the field and the people leading those efforts. And so you can really kind of dive into the wide array of different local heroes that we'll be showcasing. And I guess, you know, kind of specifically, you know, we work on really securing more marine protected areas around the world. Right now, roughly 3% of our oceans are formally protected. And we need to reach a much higher percentage of full protection of our oceans if we want to see biodiversity, you know, thrive and all of our ocean systems continue to generate the incredible resources that they do. So one of our key kind of objectives within our oceans work at LDF is to support our partners that are working to secure more formal protections throughout the oceans. You know, just last year, we had an effort that we had been supporting over the past 5 years finally come to fruition in that we were able to help our partners secure the largest marine protected area in the world in Antarctica. So that was, as you know, with environmental issues, it's hard to get those big monumental wins, but that was a big one.
Well, that's huge. And you shared a few statistics. And, you know, I think working in sustainability, we're surrounded by data. But a lot of people, and I think a lot of people that even listen to the town hall, are blind to some of these issues. What are some of the most shocking ocean statistics that you think people may not realize? How bad is it out there?
Well, one of the things that's becoming abundantly clear is that, A, we are pulling way too many fish out of our oceans. So, for example, it's estimated that 100 million sharks and rays are pulled out of the oceans every year. And that figure is simply astounding. And it just shows how grave the threats of mass overfishing of our oceans are to biodiversity and actually to the systems of our oceans. Because, as you know, our ecological systems are all deeply connected, and each life force within an ecosystem has an important role to play. So when you pull sharks and rays out of the ocean at that magnitude, it's going to have an impact on the health of the oceans. For any of the listeners that are particularly passionate about sharks and rays, we started a shark conservation fund, and you can go to sharkconservationfund.org. We are, putting together a global strategy for addressing this problem and getting resources to some of the best efforts to formally protect sharks and rays around the world.
That's incredible. And I've said this before on the podcast to a couple of guests, but a lot of times buzzwords are thrown around, in our line of work, meaning sustainability in the media in regards to, our ecosystem and green practices. And a really popular trend right now that I hear a lot about is sustainable seafood. But what does that really mean? Can you kind of define that a little bit? I know you were talking about, fish and sharks. So define sustainable seafood, small scale fisheries. What does this mean for people and the rate at which seafood is consumed?
Well, sustainable seafood is really about consuming fish that are not endangered and being able to have a way of actually tracking and ensuring that the fish that you think you are purchasing is actually that species and comes from the region that they're saying the fish is coming from. So it's actually really tricky. There's a lot of work that we've been supporting on, it's called seafood traceability. And that is making it easier for companies that are purchasing seafood from seafood suppliers to understand where that seafood comes from so that the consumer can know, okay, we have this confirmed that this species is a species that it's not endangered, so it's safe to consume and it's coming from a region that's okay to eat. So it's complicated, and there's a lot of work being done across oceans issues and issues of seafood transparency, to really make it easier for the consumer to understand where their food is coming from.
And I know you guys work with small scale fisheries as well. And I know that there's, a big campaign around that. And I think, I'm just super curious because I know you work tirelessly on like a host of initiatives. Can you take me through the life cycle of a project from like an idea or a partner to inception? I promise you that was not a Leonardo DiCaprio pun. I heard it in my head. To a full-scale program, like how do you come up with which projects to support, which people to partner with? There's so much out there to do.
That's a really good question. Today we've got over 200 different partners and organizations around the world that we're working with and supporting. So you can imagine that's a ton of relationships, that we manage. But at LDF, we very much believe in building strong, trusting relationships with our partners around the world so that we can help identify emerging opportunities that are exciting ways for us to have an impact. And so that whole network of folks is bringing those issues forward to us, telling us about new emerging threats, telling us about new emerging exciting leaders that we should support. And so we're really relying on, deep experts and partners in the field to help us identify projects that we want to support.
Have you guys ever worked, obviously Rubicon being a waste company, I am obviously very curious. Have you guys ever worked with a marine project where like waste or trash was impacting some environment? And like, did you have a successful outcome with it?
So, almost every single oceans project that we've worked on, issues of waste come up. And I think it just kind of speaks to the broader issue that needs to be addressed, which is really mitigating the amount of waste that is coming into the ocean.
Right.
And you can have an impact on that both from working with businesses and initiatives that are trying to actually address the drivers of the waste ending up in the oceans, but also even individuals on a day-to-day basis can, you know, really make an effort to use a reusable water bottle, to stop, you know, producing so much waste, because so much of that waste, even when you're working in a city, can end up actually in our oceans.
I learned recently about microplastics, like even the fiber in our clothes, everything seems to end up in our ocean. It's just super interesting to me that, you know, that regardless of how much work is done, that there's always more to do. And obviously, you know, LDF is home to really some of the biggest and most impactful campaigns for our larger issues. But I think that sometimes, especially on a platform like this, like a podcast, we should like scale it down so our listeners can not only really understand, but maybe, you know, like you and like Leo, when you were younger, you know, fuel a passion to get involved. With summer coming up, well, actually, I think it's summer is here because it's 90 degrees outside and I can't stop sweating. But a lot of people are going to do a beach vacation. And what are some ways that people can take a tangible action to reduce their waste while on the beach?
Well, I mean, a good tagline just to remember is leave nothing behind. You know, so right. So much of what ends up in the oceans from people going to the beach and enjoying the oceans is just that people are need to manage the amount of waste that they are using and then leaving. So it's just a good tagline to be sure that you leave nothing behind.
And what do you think about the use of, I mean, I'm sure I know what you think about it, but how can people reduce single-use plastics on the beach? That seems to be a really hot button issue right now in terms of ocean conservation.
Well, I mean, it seems very simple, but you know, there's a ton of great products out there, glassware that you can use to take your food to the beach. It's just a matter of kind of finding alternatives to plastic. And they're out there. They've been used for a long time. You just have to put a little bit more thought into it before you head to the beach.
Right. One of the main goals of this episode, especially besides, you know, Justin dropping some serious knowledge about our planet, like I said, was to ignite a flame in our listeners to help get them on the front lines of these super critical issues. But before we talk about how a person, you know, could help get involved with LDF, how do you think a business should get involved in the conversation to accelerate positive change globally?
Well, it totally depends, of course, on the business and whether, you know, they're a local community-based business or a national scale business. But I think it's important to really look at and find trusting partners that they can work with in their community and in their issue area, and start to build relationships with organizations that are providing solutions to some of these tough problems. And for business owners to be creative about how they can provide additional platforms and additional resources to those organizations to implement solutions.
I think that that's fantastic advice and obviously a great place to start. Okay, switching gears a little bit. It's my favorite part of the show. I really enjoy this because I always want to get to know my guests a little bit better. And the best way to do that is obviously to fire off 10 random questions. So Justin, just say the first thing that pops into your head, okay?
I'll do my best.
You'll do great. If you could be any sea creature, which would you be and why?
Dolphin. And probably because they're such incredibly intelligent creatures that have such deep emotional connections to their families. And plus, it would be pretty amazing to be able to fly through the ocean as adeptly as dolphins do.
Who is the last person that you talked to on the phone?
Good question. Oh, I talked to a woman named Helen who works at SOS Orangutan Society, and she's one of our key partners working to protect this amazing rainforest in northern Sumatra.
What is one piece of advice that you've heard in your life that has stuck with you?
Probably life is a journey, not a destination, and that you should try to be as present as you can throughout your life to really appreciate the boundless beauty of life in our world.
What was your favorite subject in school?
Art.
What is one language you would like to learn that you don't speak already?
Spanish, because it's so incredibly needed in the work that I do.
What's the last movie that you saw?
I just watched Thor.
What does success mean to you?
Success to me, I mean, I guess we've set a pretty high bar over here working on environmental issues, but it is ensuring that, you know, that we protect enough of nature so that both nature and the incredible biodiversity of our planet and humans can coexist and even thrive together.
What is your guilty pleasure food?
Probably ice cream. Is there anybody that doesn't feel that way about ice cream?
You know, I've asked this probably 10 times and I've never gotten ice cream.
What? Really?
I've gotten spaghetti a fair amount, never ice cream.
Spaghetti is a good option, but, you know, totally different for your taste palate than ice cream.
Exactly. Sweet versus savory. Who will know? What was the first concert you ever attended?
Depeche Mode.
Ooh, that's a good one. And finally, what is one eco-responsible action that you have incorporated into your everyday life?
Good question, because there's a lot of those. Right now, I'll just speak to what I'm trying to do right now. Right now, I'm trying to minimize the amount of waste that I generate in our household. And though that seems simple, as you probably know, it's not actually. It's hard to get away from all the different kind of packaging, et cetera, that we're thrown out in our daily lives. So that's my current personal mission.
That's great. There's an awesome book called The Zero Waste Home by Bea mm-hmm. Johnson. She's fantastic, and you should definitely read that if you haven't. And it's funny that you say that. I'm about to embark on a personal journey, and it'll transport into blogs and podcasts for Rubicon, but I'm going to carry around a bag with me and just put in the bag every piece of single-use plastic or single-use item that I'm offered, whether in a coffee shop or at a restaurant or on the street, and see how many single-use items I can collect in 1 month without even being, you know, with just being offered them, not even being, you know, making that choice myself. And I think the results should be pretty shocking.
I think they will. Make sure you send me the results. I want to see that.
I absolutely will. Before I let you go back to, you know, just saving the world, where can everybody find more information? Can they donate? How can everybody get involved with LDF?
So you can learn more about our work on our website, leonardodicaprio.org, and you can also support our efforts there. And you can also follow us on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, both Leo's accounts as well as the foundation's accounts. You know, we're pretty much every day posting news, stories about some of our partners on the ground, urgent calls to action. So it's a great way to stay abreast of day-to-day environmental work.
Awesome. Justin, thank you so much for being here. That was one of the most informative 23 minutes I think I've had in a really long time. And I really appreciate you coming on.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Amy. We really appreciate the opportunity.